21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Let's go!
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a loaded PhD, hanging out in this part of the universe, and tonight we have identified where we are. And, of course, our engineer is Jake Bryant, and our executive producer, research assistant, is Laura Kortner. Our first guest this hour is Mike Gibbons, the executive director of the Babe Ruth Museum, who is joining us to describe an evening with Brooks Robinson next month that you just won't want to miss. But before we get to Mike, I want to tell you about the U.S. premiere of a semi-related film called The Band That Wouldn't Die. The Baltimore Ravens and the Maryland Film Festival are proud to announce the United States premiere of The Band That Wouldn't Die, which will play October the 6th on Tuesday. That's usually where Tuesdays fall, on October the 6th, of course, on the Smart Vision Boards at the M&T Bank Stadium. Barry Levinson, the film's creator and host of the event, is an Academy Award-winning director and Baltimore native, and I am thrilled to share this at the M&T Stadium, M&Ms I was thinking about, with the great Baltimore fans and our wonderful marching band, he said, of the film, which recently debuted with much acclaim at the Toronto Film Festival. Quote, all of us who worked on the film focused on capturing the very special Baltimore spirit that has always fascinated me and will certainly be present at this event. And to purchase premiere tickets at $5, fans can visit www.baltimoreravens.com/marching bands. www.baltimoreravens.com/marching ravens or call 410-261-RAVE. All right, so that's October the 6th, 6 to 8:30. Gate opens at 6 p.m. at the M&T Bank Stadium. It's free in Lot BC to park there, and $5 a ticket. And the premiere will open with a small performance from Baltimore's Marching Ravens. And additionally, fans can watch the 53-minute film when it is scheduled to air on ESPN as part of the network's 30 for 30 documentary project on October the 13th. Well, you know, the Hieronymus and Meyerhoff families have been friends of John Zeman and the Colts Marching Band and now the Ravens Marching Band for many decades, as well as the Babe Ruth and Sports Legends Museum, which is sponsoring an evening with Brooks Robinson. The Babe Ruth Museum's, actually, it's not the Babe Ruth Museum's anymore. It's the Babe Ruth Birthplace. That's correct. Isn't that right? Are you there, Mike?
I'm here.
It is the Babe Ruth Birthplace, correct?
Well, it's the Babe Ruth Museum, and I'm glad you said something about that, because we now have two facilities, the Babe Ruth Birthplace, where Babe Ruth was born, and we have Sports Legends at Camden Yards, but both are controlled and operated by the Babe Ruth Museum.
Well, this is taking place at one of our favorite venues, the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall, this October the 26th in 2009, of course. You know, about 25 years ago, friends, I wanted to relate this before we talk to Brother Mike. When I recreated a 100-foot mural called A Pluribus Unum at the Lexington Market, I included portraits of Oriole ballplayers that are legendary. And, of course, Brooks Robinson was included. And about 10 years after that event, it was Brooks Robinson who helped us and the Negro League baseball players on our second visit with them to the White House in 1994. It was at that time that Vice President Al Gore received one of the 12 bats donated and signed by Brooks Robinson for the 1994 Negro Leaguers visit to the White House. So with myself, 12 other Negro Leaguer players, and a whole bunch of other folks. Well, Mike, is the executive director of the Babe Ruth Birthplace Foundation, and now it's still really, is it the Babe Ruth Birthplace Foundation or Babe Ruth Museum? I'm back to
well,
that.
Well, the corporate name is Babe Ruth Birthplace Foundation. The name that we run by and operate by is Babe Ruth Museum. That kind of gets it simple. Mm-hmm. And again, we operate the two facilities, the birthplace of Babe Ruth and Sports Legends at Camden Yards, which, as you know, we opened in 2005 and really is a celebration of Maryland sports, including the Orioles and the Ravens and Brooks Robinson.
Yeah, well, Brooks Robinson as a player is known as, quote, the human vacuum cleaner. Would you provide some stats of Brother Brooks that demonstrate that description of him?
Well, you know, I don't have the record books in front of me, but I think that any Orioles fan and really any baseball fan, because Brooks is not just a Baltimore icon, he's a national icon. But, Robert, this guy epitomized what it meant to be a third baseman, not just for our generation and, you know, for any time that we can remember, but as far back as baseball goes, he was the ultimate defensive third baseman and also could hold his own with a baseball bat in his hand. And, you know, there's an ongoing debate whether Brooks is the greatest third baseman or maybe Mike Schmidt of the Philadelphia Phillies. And, you know, I think that for all of us here in Baltimore, certainly, you know, number five, old number five is the all-time third baseman. But based primarily on his defensive excellence, he was just the best.
So he made it into the Hall of Fame in 1983 after receiving 91.98% of the vote. That's extraordinary. Only 16 gold gloves. That's all he won. He's better than Mike Schmidt. Don't tell me he's not better than Mike Schmidt. Heck with that.
I'm glad you say that. But I want you to think about 16 gold gloves. I think in the time since Brooks has left the Orioles, I'm not sure that cumulatively we've achieved 16 gold gloves. As a matter of fact, I know we haven't. And that's the annual award given out by Major League Baseball for the best player at each position defensively. Mm-hmm. And so Brooks, 16 of those, you know, a perennial all-star in his multiple decade career as a Baltimore Oriole. But, you know, even more importantly than what he did on the field, I think, is what is his value to our community as a citizen. He was and remains maybe the most loved, beloved Oriole of all time, and just a good, average, everyday man who was always accessible to the public.
Well, you must be psychic, because that's the next question I was going to ask. Is, you know, Brooks is a great athlete, obviously, but many of us have come to know him as a very caring soul, and he and his wife, Connie, have time and again assisted our community. They're extraordinary people. Now, I know for a fact that Brooks seldom, if ever, seeks any praise or recognition for his many accomplishments on or off the field. How were you able to convince Brooks to participate in an event that's focused on him, because he doesn't like to focus on himself?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. It was not easy. Every year, our organization does a gala as a fundraiser. Most nonprofits have to do that in order to help make the bottom line achievable on an annual basis. And so every year we look to honor or dedicate our gala to somebody or something. In recent years, we did 2 years ago, we did a gala to honor Art Modell for all that he brought to the NFL, but more importantly, to Baltimore. Last year, we honored Jim McKay, the deceased Jim McKay, and brought together a lot of Olympians, Maryland-born Olympians, to honor him. And these were terrific successes. So when we sat down this past spring, you know, we determined that it was about time that Baltimore honored Brooks Robinson, as I said, the most beloved Oriole of all time, I think. And really, since he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1983, Bob, and we held a Thanks Brooks Night at Memorial Stadium, you may recall, in August of 1983, we were not aware or familiar that there had ever been some kind of a big community event to thank Brooks for all that he had done for our city. And so we, back in May, approached him and said, hey, we would like to honor you. Will you consider it? And it took 2 months for us to be able to twist his arm to get him agree to let us tribute him, with a little help from his good friend and our board member, Sandy Unitas. And Sandy called Brooks finally and said, look, Brooks, John let us honor him. You'd let the community honor him, and please let us honor you because you are so deserving. And ultimately, he allowed that to happen. But you know, he's a very humble guy, and probably thought, what's the big deal about me, you know?
Well, I also have a feeling that, you know, I think he loves the Babe Ruth Museum and the birthplace and the foundation, and I think that this is one way of being able to contribute.
Well, that's true, too, and something that I've known for a while, but others may not. Back when the Babe Ruth birthplace was preserved in the late 60s and early 70s, a committee was formed, and of course, Brooks Robinson, who was still at that time an active player, joined that committee and was very active in making sure that the house where Babe Ruth was born was not torn down and demolished. And so he has a long history with our organization, and I'm glad that he is allowing us to honor him. And I think that, you know, this is going to resonate within the community. Even though these are very difficult economic times, as we all know, I think people are going to come out and pay tribute to Brooks.
I'll say. Now, the event benefits the Babe Ruth Birthplace Foundation. In addition, $5 from each ticket sold will be donated to the American Cancer Society in honor of Brooks and Constance Robinson. Tell us about the event itself now. This is going to be the 26th?
Yeah, 26th. It's a Monday night. As you said, it will be at the Meyerhof. And it's a great facility. And what we wanted to try and do, Dr. Bob, was to have a venue where we could pull off a theatrical kind of a presentation to Brooks, kind of a This Is Your Life evening. And, you know, so that's what we're going to do. And the Meyerhof, probably as well or better than any hall locally, enables us to do that. So the evening starts at 6 p.m. with a cocktail party, heavy hors d'oeuvres, and there'll be a silent auction and all of the things that if you're used to going to these kind of an event, this is what we do. There will be a VIP reception, a lot of celebrities coming into town to honor Brooks, and then at about 7:30, we're going to have a program in the theater. Now, something that we've never done before, and you will see how this works, but the Meyerhof assures us it can work splendidly, is that we are going to have a two-tiered ticket price. One ticket, $105, gets you into the cocktail party, and a $55 ticket enables you to go to the program only. So you would be entering the theater, going directly to your seats for the 7:30 show. And the 7:30 show is going to be an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes, and it's going to be all Brooks all the time, and one that will knock your socks off.
Well, that is especially nice, having that hour and a half cocktail reception in another area, and I think that works well. I also want to thank my friend Toby Blumenthal, who saw just how important this event was. Because everyone is going through very difficult times, and he wanted to make sure that this happened, and I really appreciated how you guys worked that out, because that's a very difficult thing to do about this time of the year, especially as we move towards Christmas.
Absolutely, and Toby, who works at the Meyerhof, he did a great job in making it possible for us to get in there at a price that we could absorb. In order to be profitable for ourselves, and so everybody's going to make a little bit of money off this thing, but obviously the primary objective is to pay tribute to Brooks and to acknowledge all that he's done. So hats off to the Meyerhof, to Toby, for the good work that he's done. Thank you for your help in facilitating this arrangement, and you know, it's taken a lot of people to put together, from Sandy and Itis to Brooks and Connie and to the Bob Hieronymuses of the world and Toby. It's been a good effort.
Well, in ordering tickets, so they can, you have the choice at, of 105 and or 55, and they would order their tickets by calling Ticketmaster. Is that how they will do it, at 410-547-7328?
That's one way you can do it. You can go directly through Ticketmaster to order your tickets, and they are moving quite nicely, by the way, so I would not wait too long to place that order. We're expecting a crowd of about 2,000 people to pack into the Meyerhof that night. So you can call Ticketmaster at the number you just gave. You can go on to the Babe Ruth Museum website, which is BabeRuthMuseum.com, or call the museum at 410-727-1539, and we can give you detailed information about what's going on that night, including an overview of the program, some of the celebrities that are scheduled to appear, and you know, the way that we're going to put on this tribute for Brooks.
Well, I can't wait to see some of your auction items. You always have great stuff.
Always. Yeah, we do. I wish I had the money to bid on some of this stuff. But yeah, there's good stuff there.
Always is. Yeah.
But I will tell you that the lineup of stars coming in to pay tribute to Brooks is, to me, especially wonderful this time. Guys like Frank DeFord, who is a Baltimore boy and went on to great renown as a national sports commentator, who contributes to Sports Illustrated and to NPR and different national venues like that. Ronnie Hansen, who you're going to have on a little bit later, who Brooks acknowledges is his best friend, through life, Ron Hansen. And if you don't know Ron, you ought to stay tuned to listen to the interview you're going to do with him, because he is a terrific baseball guy and can tell you stuff about Brooks that nobody else knows. And so Ron will be with us that night. Jim Palmer is going to be on hand. Earl Weaver, a lot of famous Orioles and people beyond the baseball world who are coming in to pay homage to this great athlete and great community treasure.
Well, I'm looking forward to that evening. That's one night we set aside, because I'm in the midst of doing a book, and I got to tell you, I don't go anywhere now. And I don't. You know, I can't. But I'm telling you, this is really something important enough to set aside our time. And again, friends, you can order tickets. Call Ticketmaster at 410-547-7328. Now, there are corporate sponsorships as well. And I understand the number that you could person to reach is Whitney Edmonds. That number is 410-727-1539, extension 3033. Whitney Edmonds.
She's the lady that's sitting on this whole thing and kind of coordinating it for us. And we do have some corporate sponsorships available. Masson is a sponsor, and the Baltimore Orioles have gotten in. The chairman of this event is a guy who used to employ Mr. Robinson, and that would be Henry Rosenberg, a dear friend. Used to have Crown Central Petroleum, and for years Brooks, after he got out of baseball, was under Henry's employ. So Henry is the gala chairman for this and doing a great job with it. He and his wife Dot, Sandy and Itis involved. So you've got the hierarchy of the town involved with this thing, and again, it's going to be good. It's going to be real good. You know, I was listening as you did your intro to this Barry Levinson piece on the Baltimore Colts band and the Baltimore community, and we participated in that, Robert. And I'm telling you, Barry is really has captured Baltimore in its essence in our effort to get a football team back. And he's done a great job. I can't wait to see the premiere coming out next week, because I think it's going to be a great film. A bunch of it was filmed down at Sports Legends using our facility as a backdrop. You know, we have the Baltimore Colts archives on display at Sports Legends, and very proud of it.
So that's on October the 6th. You'll be able to see it for $5 at M&T Bank Stadium, free parking in lots B and C. But if you can't make it, then October the 13th, It's a 53-minute film, and it's scheduled to air on ESPN as part of Network's 30 for 30 documentary project there on October the 13th. Well, Brother Mike, thank you for joining us tonight on 21st Century Radio. I'll be seeing you, of course, on October 26th when they let me out of my cave.
Baby, I can't wait for it. It's going to be a great night, and there will be some surprises. So I hope everybody gets down there to say hi to Brooks. We love you, Brooks. And we love you, Bob, for putting us on the air tonight. And say hi to Ronnie for me.
Okay, we certainly will. And Ron Hansen will be joining us. Talk to you soon, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Now, friends, we're going to take a break here on 21st Century Radio. And one of the most important things I want to remind you of is after our second hour, we're going to be joined by Monty Irvin, who is a Negro League baseball player and has an important book out, and we'll tell you about why that's important next hour when we return.
Of course, Radio 680. WCBM.
If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at theSellingWell.com. That's theSellingWell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit theSellingWell.com or call the Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. American history has been characterized by single moments that have defined movements. Now, with only 10% of blind children learning Braille in school, the time for a new defining moment is upon us. Join the NFB for a very special moment in the Braille literacy movement as we launch the 2009 Lewis Braille Bicentennial Silver Dollar. Funds from the sale of the coin go to the National Federation of the Blind to develop and implement effective programs to increase Braille literacy among blind children and adults. For more information, visit www.braille.org. www.braille.org.
This is Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, reminding you to stay tuned to 21st Century Radio's Hieronymus and Company for updates on Negro League baseball stars.
Well, there's Uncle Bruce. Uncle Bruce is sold out. He's sold out of, can't get a ticket now, even if you paid him $5,000. Well, yes, indeed. We're talking about the tribute to Oriole great Brooks Robinson, October the 26th, 6 p.m., sponsored by the Babe Ruth and Sports Legends Museums and held at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall. Call for information 410-727-1539, extension 3033. Go visit these two museums, friends, 216 Emory Street and Sports Legends Museum right there at Oriole Park. Artifacts and interactive exhibits profiling Maryland sports history. Plan on taking your kids with you, not just to the ball game, but the sports legends. Okay, friends, our guest for the next 20-some minutes is Ronald Hansen, born April the 5th, 1938. Is a former shortstop in Major League Baseball who played for the Baltimore Orioles 58-62, Chicago White Sox from 63-67 and 68-69, Washington Senators 1968, New York Yankees from 70-71, Kansas City Royals in 1972. He batted and threw right-handed. In 1960, Hansen surpassed all expectations by turning in a solid injury-free season, filling the Orioles' urgent need for a quality shortstop. He appeared in 153 games, finished with 22 home runs, 86 RBIs, 22 doubles, 5 triples, a .255 batting average, and a .342 on-base percentage, batting from the 8th spot. He was selected for the All-Star Game and earned American League Rookie of the Year honors, getting 22 of 24 votes, as well as a TSN Rookie of the Year award. There are many other things he didn't accomplish, but the last thing I wanted to mention was a triple play, that he made. I'm going to check on that with him on the actual date of that. An unassisted triple play, I believe it was July 30th, 1968, in Major League history, and that was the first one in 41 years. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Ron Hansen.
Thank you.
Ron, that unassisted triple play. You know, every time I've gone to a game, I've always wanted to see one, never have seen one, and yet you did it unassisted.
Well, they're a little rare, or used to be a little rare. My triple play, or unassisted triple play, was made in 1968. The one before mine was made in 1927, and it was so there was 41 years in between that one and the one I made. And then there was another 20-some years after I made mine until there was another one made. So in 60-some years, there was only one made. Now, since that time, there have been a few more, but it is a rarity in baseball, and it was something that I'm glad that I did. I'm proud of being part of it, and it was just part of my baseball career.
Yeah, but could you, in 10 or 15 seconds, how did you do it?
Well,
how did you get the ball, and where did you put it?
Well, I was playing shortstop, and we were playing in Cleveland, and there were men on first and second, and it was 3-2 count. The runners were running, and it was, of course, nobody out. A low line drive hit up the middle, caught it in the air, which made the hitter out. Was running in the direction of second base, and the runner on second base, as I crossed second base, was out. And the runner on first base couldn't get turned around quick enough, and I kind of just ran him down and tagged him.
So hot dog,
it was all three outs made within a period of about an eighth of a second.
Well, maybe in about 40 more years I'll get a chance to see one of those.
Well, hopefully you will. It's always nice. There's been a few of them made in the last few years. And if you do get a chance, it would be worth seeing.
Well, okay, we're back a half a century.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
50 years ago. We're back a half a century ago. You joined the Baltimore Orioles about a year, or maybe about a year after Brooks. Is that true? Somewhere around there, or is it before at the same time?
Well, Brooks came to the big leagues about the same time as I did, although he had spent part of a year before I came. And then both of us went to spring training. We were both sent to AAA ball, and we spent our minor league season, most of the minor league season in AAA, and became friends and roommates, and have since had about a 50-year friendship.
Well, what were your, since no one's going to tell Brooks what you're going to say now, what were your first impressions of meeting Brooks and spending the first couple of months with him?
Well, Brooks and I were very young at that time. We were both 19 or 20 years old, both single, and I realized right from the beginning that Brooks was going to be a tremendous ball player. He was a hard worker then. He had a lot of talent, and I don't know if a lot of baseball people know this, but Brooks actually signed as a second baseman with the Orioles, and Paul Richards decided that he would be a pretty good third baseman and moved him to third base, and that's where he played his career, all of his big league career, and became one of the best in the business ever.
Well, when did your relationship gel almost immediately, or did it take time?
No, we kind of hit it off together immediately. We have a lot of the same interests. We like movies. We like to do a lot of the same things. And as I said, we were young, and we spent a lot of time together. We were on a ball club with some veterans, and we were the young guys. And so it was kind of a natural thing that, you know, the young guys kind of stuck together. And Brooks and I kind of hit it off right from the beginning, and we have continued that friendship for many, many years.
Well, what was it like to be an Oriole as we were slowly moving towards the first World Championship in 66? What was that mix like? Can you remember? I mean, this is, I don't see how ball players can remember these things, but they seem to.
Well, some remember better than others, but I don't remember the 66 years in the series in Baltimore because I had already been traded.
Right.
I was traded to the Chicago White Sox after the 1962 season, and I spent almost 9 years in Chicago, a little over 8 years. And so I missed the World Series in 66 that they were in, but there were a lot of great players here at that particular time. It's when they got Frank Robinson, and they had a great pitching staff, and they just swept right through the series, which they weren't supposed to. And it was great for the city.
But before that, when we were having our 54 wins and 100 game losses and things like that during those years, I was just curious as to what kind of things go on, especially like in the dugout, because the dugout always seems to be a sacred place to us folks who never get a chance to be in there. And you, as you noted, you had a lot of older players, and you and the Brooks were some of the younger, young Turks, I guess you might call yourselves. What's it like in a dugout like that?
Well, when we came up, it was really the turn of the Orioles, supposedly. There were a lot of, there were some of the young, we had a couple of young pitchers, Steve Barber and Chuck Estrada, and Milt Pappas was here, who was in the early part of his career, and we had some good young pitchers and young players, and we kind of turned things around. And as you know, in the 1960, we were in first place in September, and we kind of run into the Yankees in a bad series, and ended up not finishing as well as we should have. But we made a run at it, and that was fun. And for a young guy who had was playing in the big leagues for his first consecutive full year, it was a tremendous thrill, and it was always nice when. In those days when you went to New York and could play against Mantle and Ford and go to Detroit and play against Al Kaline, you know, the big-name stars.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
With me being I'm from California, and we didn't have Major League Baseball when I grew up in California, and so to be playing against those people and be on the same team with stars, it was just a big thrill for me.
Were you ever a roommate with Brooks?
I was. Brooks and I grew up in the system together, the Orioles system together. We were roommates, and we spent a lot of time together, and we were roommates on the road. And in those days, when you traveled, you had a roommate, and Brooks and I were roommates throughout some of our minor league career and then in the big leagues for a few years. So, as I said earlier, we hit it off real good. We kind of like the same things. We like the same foods, and it just kind of became a friendship that has lasted for a long, long time.
So you would be at, before games, after games with Brooks. You would talk about the game. Would you talk about the coming game and the pitchers that you were going up against and things like that?
We would, and Brooks is. And I guess, and myself were always into baseball at that time. It was, it was our livelihood, and we were trying to do well. And we spent a lot of time talking baseball. And we not only talked baseball when we were at the ballpark, but we talked about it away from the park. We had a place here in Baltimore near the ballpark on 33rd Street, and we stayed together there along with Chuck Estrada and a pitcher named Hal Brown.
Skinny Brown.
And there were four of us, and we had a place to stay, and it was always good to talk baseball there pretty much all the whole summer.
So you could actually almost walk to the stadium.
We did walk to the stadium. We lived about three blocks away, and we would walk to the stadium, and we'd go early in the afternoon, and like I say, it was a fun time, and it was great to be in Baltimore in those days.
Were there some of these questions are going to kind of be silly to you and other ball players, but you know, many of us who watch, you know, I'm an Oriole fan because I grew up in the city. Whether our team win, of course I want our team to win,
sure.
But even if it doesn't, to me, I'm still going to go because I just love it. I mean, I just love the memories. I used to live right across the alleyway from old Oriole ballpark. That was back in the 40s when the International League Orioles would play there. And as a matter of fact, even Babe Ruth played on that particular lot.
That's what I understand.
It was just extraordinary. And, of course, there were a lot of Negro League games there, but I didn't know very much about those. But to know that Babe Ruth actually was on that field in the year of 1918, 1919, was just an extraordinary feeling. But when you get together before or after a game with another player, Is there any, because I keep thinking of what I've learned from the Negro Leaguers. They talk about games to death. I mean, they remember almost every pitch, every ball, everything, and analyzing how they won the game or how they lost the game. Was there any of that kind of thing going on as to, I should have done this better, you should have done that, or didn't you cross into that territory?
Well, you are right. I think the times have changed a little bit. I don't think players nowadays talk as much baseball probably as we did in the past. But, yeah, we talked a lot after a game. We'd sit down and like you say, analyze things. Maybe I should have done this different, or I wish we would have done that different or whatever. And sometimes it was good, and it was always good to think about what the game was. And because in those days, you have to remember there were only eight teams in the league, and you played each team a lot more times than you do now with 16 teams.
In the league. Mm-hmm.
And so you might play New York here 1 week, and then in 10 days or so you'd be playing them again, and then maybe in the next month you'd be playing them again. So you would talk about pitchers and what they threw you and how they pitched you, and you talk about hitters. Brooks and I would talk about hitters and how we might play them and so on. As far as the games go, I was not a big guy that remembers a lot of things about games, but I do remember we talked a lot of baseball before and after the games.
Well, one more question before you go. When did you know Brooks was indeed a human vacuum cleaner?
Well, when you played next to him, you realized it all the time, every day. There wasn't too many balls that got through the infield that were hit to either side of him. And this wasn't something that was a coincidence. I mean, he worked hard at it, and we'd go to the park early, and he would do his routine and do his drills. And Brooks always had great hands, and he always had first movement, first couple step movement, and great lateral movement in short distance, and with great hands that you just didn't hit balls by him. And I think that when you saw him play on a daily basis, you realized that there was going to be something great there, and there wasn't going to be too many base hits go by him.
Well, the logo that they're using for this event in the evening, Brooks, the Brooks, you see Brooks literally laying horizontally with his right hand. He's almost looking, he looks as if he is actually leaning and holding his body up on his right hand as he's about ready to grab that ball.
Right.
How do you practice something like that?
Well, you don't practice that, but those things occur in a game, and, you know, there's a good photography.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Have to give the photographer that took that picture a lot of credit, because there's probably only about a 16th of a second that, that he's in that position. So, but Brooks could make those plays, and he made a lot of them.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us again, Ron. And again, I want to thank you for years and years ago when you were one of the first, when Leon Day finally got into the Hall of Fame. Of course, he knew he got in, but he didn't last to get to see it.
Right.
You were a big help during that time period, and I really appreciate
that. Well, and I remember seeing you there, and I know that you've done a lot for the Negro League and the players in this area, and that's great. It was a real thrill to be part of that, and it's good to talk to you again. I haven't seen much of you in between all those years.
Well, most of our work right now is outside of the country, and that's perhaps one of the reasons. Ron, I look forward to seeing you at the event October the 26th at the Meyer Hall. Friends, call 410-727-7593, extension 3033 for more information. And we've just been speaking with the former shortstop and teammate and very good friend of Brooks Robinson and current Major League scout. See you at the event there, Ron.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the 26th.
Yep, we'll party pretty hard. And when we return, we'll spend a few minutes to invite you to the opening of the Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness exhibit, an event at AVAM, the American Visionary Arts Museum, opening next week, October the 3rd. Next hour, Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, teammate of legendary Hall of Famer Leon Day, will join us to review his outstanding book, Few Chosen, Defining Negro League's Greatness Across the Eras.
Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, can you think what is the connection between art, life, and UFOs? The answer is Bud Hopkins, the grandfather of UFO abduction research and a trained artist by profession. Art, life, and UFOs, Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, the Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com. Or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
Hello, this is Uri Geller, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Hey, Uri Geller, he's the pitch for the New York Yankees there, 1927 to 1942. Had a one-loss record of 92 wins and just six losses. Now, that's one of the reasons why you can be paid $25 million a year, friends. Well, by the way, I want to make sure you remember what's going on here, and that is, you know, that's the tribute to Oriole great Brooks Robinson, October the 26th, 6 p.m., sponsored by the Babe Ruth and Sports Legends Museums, and held at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall. Thank you, Toby Blumenthal, for that help there. Call for information at 410-727-1539, extension 3033. 410-727-1539, extension 3033. Now, friends, of course, opening at the American Visionary Arts Museum on Saturday, October the 3rd, is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, the 15th annual thematic exhibition at America's official National Museum for Self-Taught Intuitive Artistry, and that is the American Visionary Arts Museum, The Quest for Human Rights and the Search for Personal Fulfillment, as proposed in the 1776 American Declaration of Independence, provide the starting point for this international exhibition curated by Roger Manley. Works by the last surviving descendant of the Tsars of Russia, Iroquois Indians, French revolutionaries, illegal immigrants, Guantanamo Bay detainees, Holocaust survivors, and incarcerated prisoners are among those by the 80 visionary artists to be featured. And joining us now, that is some group, isn't it? Joining us now is Pete Hilsey, the Director of Communications at AVAM, who is going to tell us about some upcoming special events where you can preview this exhibit before the official opening on October the 3rd. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Pete.
Hi, Dr. Bob. Thank you so much.
How's your pitching arm tonight, Pete?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're pitching this show because it's really a fantastic one. So my jaw is a little sore, but my arm's fine.
But what is this new theme all about? What kind of artist artwork were sought to express it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this theme, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, is a perfect one for our visionary artists, because who better than these self-taught individuals to express this ideal of what has been associated with our country, this pursuit of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Each of them in their own, his or her own distinctive way, has declared independence on that path to seeking happiness and self-determination and expression, and it comes in all forms, from weavers to painters, sculptures, even shrinky dinks in this show.
Well, as you know, everyone really is an artist. And you can teach yourself to enter these higher states of awareness just by creating things. And that brings a great deal of joy. And a lot of people have asked me, you know, about artists, aren't they bored? Well, I'll tell you, friends, when you start working on things and creating things over a period of 6, 8, 10, 12 hours, you just move into another state. Isn't that correct?
That is so true. And one of our artists in the show is actually dedicated his life ever since he was 16 years old to recreating in exacting detail, in miniature, all of the great works of art from the last 30,000 years.
He'll
be in the show.
That's a chore.
2,000 is in his collection, but we'll be showing just a small portion of those. But,
isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? Look, tell us about the preview events open to the public. There is Thursday, October the 1st at 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. What's going to happen there?
That's right. Our guest curator, Roger Manley, will be here and hosting a little cocktail and hors d'oeuvre reception and an opportunity for a little chat with him and also a Q&A with both him and some of our visiting artists. And it's a great way to get to know about the process, about how he's gone about discovering these artists and getting the artwork here to be with us. And, of course, the artists will be there, which is a rare, tremendous opportunity for us to actually have some of our artists in town. So we're very much looking forward to that.
So it costs $50 ticket for, and there's just limited space available.
That's right. There's a limited special little thing we're doing, and hopefully Roger is going to be fresh enough after his busy couple weeks here. But he's a great guy, a folklorist, a very studied individual, and just a great guy to be around too.
And for information to get in on this, Katie at, that's K-A-T-I-E, at avam.org. That number to call is 410-244-1900, extension 238, 410-244-1900, extension 238. Then the following night, October the 2nd, we party again.
That's right.
From 7 to 10 p.m. You guys know how to party, aren't you?
Well,
sure.
this is my favorite event of the year, each opening, and it's not because we do anything too over the top. It's not about, you know, sometimes we've got pretty wild costume parties and things like that that go on, but this is really about the artwork and the artists and all of our friends, the members of the museum, and who care about their community and creativity of all sorts. So, and we'll have at least a dozen of our artists here. We say a few words, but then, you know, throw open the doors and get our first look at this exhibition. I can speak to you not only as the director of communications here at the museum, Bob, but as a person who just appreciates you know, creativity. That it's a great show, and I think everyone, even if they're unfamiliar with the museum, would have a great time. This would be a great way to you know, dip your toe into our life down there at the museum.
Well, there's going to be music by DJ Big Game.
That's right. That's
beverages,
right.
Light fare, and happiness. Members are free, but it's open to the public, and there are and the public will pay $20 at the door.
It's a perfect time to become a member. I say just become a member, and you get into the party for free. For the rest of the year, you can come to the museum as often as you want. You can bring. We give you a couple passes for guests, and discounts on future workshops and ticketed events and things like that. So this is definitely a time to become a member and throw your support.
Well, that's especially important in regards to trying to make sure that this tradition, which is an extraordinary tradition, 15 years of this.
That's right.
And to have such recognition from all around the planet. It's just that's the kind of thing that I think most Baltimoreans do not understand.
No, it's true, and it is the only place like it in the country and really in the world. There's a few other museums that do feature, you know, raw art or outsider art, but none of them really weave into the context of the show, life at large, you know, the greater humanity, literature, politics, music, pop culture, all gets thrown in there. You know, all this artwork does not happen in a vacuum, and we like to celebrate that where it comes from.
So October the 1st is what time is that again on October
1st? 5:30 on the 1st, 5:30. Is the curator's reception with Roger Manley. And And on Friday, October 2nd, that starts at 7 p.m. And I'd say get there right at 7 p.m.
7 to 10 p.m. at least. That's the preview party. And friends, I suggest you become a member. And you can do that also by calling Katie at avam.org, 410-244-1900, extension 238. We'll be seeing you, Pete, we'll be seeing you on 3 days in a row. We'll...
Now, the latest from Fox News on the most powerful names in talk radio.